This is episode 64 of Our Modern Heritage, the Home and Family Culture Podcast, and I'm your host, Jody Chafee. In this episode, I talk with Jody Cook, an entrepreneur and creator of Clever Tykes. Family culture is the collective vision, values, traditions, and habits that create your family identity and purpose. All families have a culture, whether by default or by design. My mission is to help you discover and design your family culture more intentionally by offering insights and tools from experts, authors, and influencers who are lending services to families or have been influenced by their own family culture in the course of finding their success. As I explore the different possibilities of family culture, I will be posting updates and interacting with you on my site at homeandfamilyculture.com and on Instagram and Facebook at Family Culture Podcast. Episodes will air each week on Tuesday. So come search Our Modern Heritage wherever you listen to podcasts and join me on this journey of redefining our family culture. Jody Cook is the co-author of Clever Tykes, a series of storybooks and parent-teacher resources which inspire confidence, positivity, and resourcefulness in children ages 6 to 9. The books are read in every primary school in the United Kingdom and have just launched in the USA via Amazon. Jody was included in the Forbes 30 Under 30 list of social entrepreneurs in 2017 and also delivered a TEDx talk with the title Creating Useful People. Welcome, Jody. I'm so excited to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
And I love your name. It's always good to have another Jody. So welcome so much. Tell us some more about what inspired you to start Clever Tykes.
So what inspired me to start Clever Tykes was, I started my own social media agency when I was 22. Mm-hmm. And when I went to start it, I did not think that it was a big deal. I didn't think it was a risk. I didn't give it a second thought. I just thought, hey, I want to write Facebook posts for people, and then just started doing it. And then it was only when I was a couple of years in that when I talked to my friends about it, they were like, wow, I could never have the confidence to do that, or I could never take that big step. And I was like, really? It doesn't matter. Because, I mean, at the time, I'd moved back in with my mom and dad after university or college, and all I had to pay for was my phone bill. So, I mean, I was like, what can possibly go wrong? Like, how hard can it be? So I really didn't think of it as being a risk. And when I talked to more people, I found that there was a real link between people who grew up with parents who had started their own business themselves, mm-hmm. and people feeling like they could start their own, and those who grew up with employed parents and them feeling like they could just never go on and start their own business.
Yeah.
There was one experience that I remember really clearly, and there's an initiative in the UK called Startup Loans, and it's all around giving people a loan, a mentor and support to go on and start their own business.
Cool.
And so I was invited to be one of the ambassadors of Startup Loans when they first started it. And I was one of 12 ambassadors who had all started their business with less than £1,000. And so there was me, there was 11 others. And I mean, I had like the smallest or the second smallest business in the room at the time. And I was surrounded by people who were just like incredibly successful. I was looking around the room like, wow, what am I even doing here? And so there was someone who had started their own, like a chat room business when they were 14, and they'd sold it to become a 14-year-old millionaire.
Wow.
There was someone who started Student Beans, which in the UK is like the website that every student goes to get all their kind of discounts and coupon codes. And then there was Carrie Green, the founder of the Female Entrepreneur Association, which is like a huge network of female entrepreneurs. And so lots of people who were very, very successful in very different arenas. Mm-hmm. And so in the meeting, the chair of the meeting went round and asked everyone about their business and then said, just out of interest, out of the 12 of you, who here has a parent who's also started their own business? And so I put my hand up because my mom's been self-employed for probably about 15 years now. Mm-hmm. And I thought there might be a few others in the room, but it was actually 11 out of the 12 people in the room who also had a parent in business. And so we were sat there all with our hands up looking around going, oh. Uh-huh. And I think just really key is that it wasn't about money. It wasn't about, no one had been given like loads of cash to start off because we'd all started it on less than £1,000. Mm-hmm. it had to be something more than that. And so when I got back from that meeting, I started talking about it to my husband, and we were just like, we need to get to the bottom of what this is. What do people grow up with that just means that they can just go and do it and achieve so much, like at a very young age? And that's when we sort of really, well, quite naively decided that we were going to almost like bottle this role model effect, mm-hmm. and write the role models into storybooks. And I guess at the time we were so, so naive. We just thought, yeah, how hard can it be? We'll write some books. We'll get them illustrated. We'll get them published, and then we'll start selling them, and it'll be great. And we probably didn't realize like the big mountain of work we were signing ourselves up for, but that's probably part of it. You just go head first into things, yeah. and you don't even realize that it's going to be a problem. So that was really why we started it. And then since then, what we've realized is it's not even just about role models. It's about getting people to think a certain way, like getting people to be like useful people, like the kind of phrase that we've sort of coined for it. And it's like where you could think of a challenge, you actually think of the solution, and mm-hmm. and you don't see things as obstacles that can't be overcome. You see like really interesting ways to work something, and you're more likely to say, yes, let's do that. How can we make it happen? Rather than no, that will never work. And that's kind of what we've found that people who read the books are now like developing. It's like a kind of change in behavior.
Mm-hmm. And I've found that with talking to some other people that I've interviewed on here about how to be entrepreneurial minded, mm-hmm. is that you are solution minded. You know, a lot of times we grow up thinking about problems, and if we don't have that entrepreneurial mind, then we're not looking for the solutions. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. I can see that. That's a really big key in that perspective, mm-hmm. is that you want to look for solutions. So what you're saying then is that you found that the people who started these businesses they really grew up with that attitude, because their parents modeled for them that type of attitude and mindset, is that to look for solutions. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. Well, even things like they just talked about, say, they might have talked about business problems and solutions around the dinner table, maybe. There's a really nice little anecdote that Carrie Green, the Female Entrepreneur Association founder, told me about what her dad taught her when she was growing up. And he got her and her two brothers and sister to, if anyone was ever being negative or they were kind of saying stuff that you just didn't really want to kind of take on to your own like thought process, you had to imagine that there was this big bell jar over you, and that their words and thoughts were just kind of bouncing off and wasn't touching you. And I just love that so much. And like that, if you're taught that from a young age, like imagine what that could lead to in terms of you being resilient and not worried about other people's opinions. I just think it's so powerful.
Yeah. And I think that when you don't have that model for you, you don't see your parents learn, you know, teaching you how to solve problems or things like that. Because I think when you have an entrepreneur, or you are an entrepreneur, excuse me, then you are the one that has to figure out the solutions. You know, when you're an employee, then you have to look to your employer for the solutions. And so you're not necessarily thinking about, I need to be the one that's creating the solutions. You're going, that's somebody else's problem.
So like about owning them.
Yeah, totally. And so that's, you know, that's an interesting concept of how looking to creating solutions really does create that resilience, because you are the one that has to come up with the solutions, and you're not looking outside of yourself to find those solutions. It really does, you know, start and end with you going, I need to figure those things out. Mm-hmm. And so how have you figured out and discovered that knowing and taking that ownership creates that resilience?
I think that if I look back at my own like childhood and working out when it was first kind of integrated into how I was brought up, it's definitely in the suitcase story that I talk about in my TEDx talk. Mm-hmm. And from the age of, it must have been young, one of my earliest ever memories is about to go on holiday and mom says, okay, here's your suitcase, go and pack it. And just having to kind of go into my wardrobe and try and plan ahead and try and work out what I was going to wear on different days, and like all these different decisions to make. And I think even just doing that taught me the independence and resourcefulness that I still use now. And I think what my mom must have been thinking is like, what's the worst that could happen?
Yeah.
Because really, it's what is the worst that could happen? I guess I put a stupid outfit on and I look a bit silly and then I don't do it next time. Like that's really all it can be. So I think that's something that definitely like taught me exactly how to do that from a very early age. I think maybe the fear of failure and kind of fear of making mistakes come into that. Because if you're always thinking what's the worst that could happen, then actually it's probably not that bad. So you can probably do it.
Right. And that's so interesting. So your mom was probably going, well, she's got to learn by experience how to do this stuff. And I think a lot of times we think as parents too, we try to think this way, is that let's let them make these mistakes while they're little so that there's not like a major, you know, there's not going to be a major catastrophe if something goes wrong. Right.
Yeah.
And so it's good to learn those types of things when they're little, because then you learn progressively how to take bigger risks. And so that's an interesting fact, you know, idea, is this idea of this risk factor. You know, so many parents would want to hover over their children and go, no, add this to your suitcase and add that and make sure you have this. And, you know, we want to hover over our children saying, make sure you eat your vegetables, make sure you eat your, you know, that you're doing your homework, make sure you're doing X, Y, and Z. And so, or if the kids looks like they're going to take some risks, we're going, no, don't do that. You're going to get hurt.
Yeah. I wonder if it was, as well was partly the trust factor, because maybe she didn't trust that I would do it right at first, but then after a little while, she probably had such a trust in me that it would actually be okay, and had a trust that I knew the decision. I knew what was right to do in the end, really, because overall it was just what I wanted to wear, wasn't it? And it just reminded me. I went to, my friend's got a daughter, and we went not so long ago to like a soft play area where they've got the big kind of bouncy castle stuff. And so her daughter Sophia was about to go and play, and Sarah, my friend, said, you need to take your boots off. And she looked down, she took her boots off, and she said, okay. And then she pointed to her dress and she went, do I need to take my dress off too? And my friend Sarah just looked at her and said, what do you think? And so Sophia took a little while to answer, and then she went, no, I'll leave my dress on. And so I don't know what it was. I mean, it could have been because she'd seen the other kids were wearing clothes, or she realized she might get cold or something. But whatever it was, she worked out that answer for herself. And I mean, she's only 4 years old. And the point is, she got there. So I wonder if maybe, like, I don't know, as parents and teachers, like, it's so easy to give the answer, when actually just saying, well, what do you think, can lead them to find the right answer for themselves.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think that's really important. I like this idea that you bring up trust, because, you know, it's us. It's the parents that are almost more risk averse than our children. Yeah. Because we go, I don't want them to get hurt. I don't want them to get embarrassed. I don't want them to, you know, whatever it is. And we feel like it's our job to, you know, orient our children to expectations and protocol and you know, different standards, you know, social standards or things like that.
Yeah.
And I think that to a degree, that's absolutely right. Right. We want to teach our children appropriate behaviors. But then once you do, stop putting all that extra emphasis so much. I mean, there are some things that need to be reinforced at times, but I think it's our inclination to jump in and rescue our kids before they need it, before they ask for it. And that's not doing them any favors. So how would we apply that question in things like creating a business or being resourceful with schoolwork or their chores, or, you know, in their relationships even, or things like that? How would we relate that question?
Some of the parents and teachers that we've spoken to about how they, well, incorporate the Clever Textbooks into their teaching, but also how they develop resourceful people. It is about asking what you think, and it also is about asking why, but just tying that into everyday situations. So there was someone I was talking to, and what she did was, if she was in the supermarket and there was a long line, rather than just kind of standing there looking bored, flicking through the magazine, she'd say, well, why is there a long line? Like, what? Why are all these people here? And then she'd talk with her kids about it. Well, it's a really nice way of even getting into supply and demand and how it's busy and lots of people want to buy stuff. And it might be a certain time of year, like it might be Christmas time, which means that people are all shopping for their food. Mm. And then even questions like, well, hang on, this is really busy. So are people going to like carry on staying in the line, or are they just going to leave and go somewhere else? And what could the supermarket do about this? And it's almost like just asking lots of little tiny questions that not only pass the time while you're waiting in a line, which I guess is a good thing, but then also just get people to start thinking about the world around them and why that's happening. I think I've done a couple of interviews with kind of entrepreneurs and business leaders about their own childhoods, because it's an area that just absolutely fascinates me. And and there's a lot of things that tie their childhoods together. And one of them is international, kind of almost like international experience. Like at some point when they were younger, they had a realization that the world was bigger than just their like village or their town. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that's just part of like opening people's minds and getting them to see the possibilities as wider, and then you almost by accident start thinking about where you fit into that wider plan. And so I guess it starts from asking questions in a supermarket, and it ends up with working out where you could live when you were older, or what you could do for a career, or just lots of different like kind of imagining things.
Well, it creates open-mindedness when you start thinking about, you know, what, where you fit into the world, where you fit into. And you start with where I fit into the supermarket, what's happening there. And that's totally, you know, it's something that you have to start somewhere. You know, when they're little, they think they're the center of the universe, you know. Uh-huh. And then, you know, as they get bigger, you start going, we need to instill in them these values that there's a world out there that they have a place in, and that they have something to contribute.
Talked a tiny bit in our emails about their sort of educational conveyor belt that it feels like so many people are on, and I definitely felt that myself with I think some elements of the conveyor belt are kind of, I kind of get why they're there, maybe. So like I'm trying to do this in US terms, not UK terms. I remember going from infant school to junior school, then to secondary school, then to sixth form, and then I went to university, or what you guys call college. But if you'd have pinned me down then and said, why are you going to university? I think my honest answer would have been because all my friends are. And I think that was it. And I didn't really know. I didn't plan it out. It was just you apply for universities because that's what everyone does. The school I went to was brilliant and I loved it, but it was, the school's success was measured in how many of its students went to university. So of course it's going to send everyone there. Yeah. So you become a percentage in their success figures. Have we got X percent of people to go to university? And so I don't know now if it was it might have been the right decision. It might have not been. Like I don't think I'd necessarily change anything apart from I would have thought about it more. Yeah. And I would have made sure that it was a conscious decision. And that's the education conveyor belt that you can get stuck on if you're not careful.
Yeah.
And I think because when I was at college, even when I was at university, the job that I was going to do once I left, so like starting a social media agency, running social media platforms for companies, that didn't even exist then.
Yeah.
So I was like training myself for a future that, like there was no courses at the time in how you could be a social media manager. You just sort of vaguely did marketing in English and then you kind of made it up after that. So
yeah.
And I think it's even more like that now.
Yeah.
A few of my friends have a nightmare at Christmas when they go and see their aunties and uncles and grandparents because they just don't understand what they do.
Yeah.
And so they'll be like, oh, aren't you going to get actually Carrie Green, who I've mentioned before, she's got a network of something like, it's over a million like female entrepreneurs who are all signing up to her courses, listening to her talks, like getting inspired to go and grow their business. And each year her auntie still says to her, so when are you going to go get a real job? And so it's like, if someone's not a lawyer or someone's not a teacher or a doctor or something that you understand what they do, it's almost like it doesn't exist. And so how can you, like so many kids now want to be YouTubers.
Yeah.
And there's no school in the world that is teaching kids how to be YouTubers. There's just not. So you sort of have to, like, that's why adaptability is so important, because that's all that matters.
Yeah.
And in the storybook that you've actually got there, I think you've got Code It Cody, haven't you?
Uh-huh. Yes.
So in Code It Cody, I won't give away the ending for you, but
no spoilers.
He realizes that he really loves fixing things, and he loves kind of computers and things. Mm-hmm. So he starts going to computer club and starts learning how to kind of code his own computer game, and has a mentor in the form of Mr. Chip, who teaches him about how to code. And so what Mr. Chip really emphasizes is, firstly, that there needs to be like a demand for your product. There's no point making something that no one wants to play, and that's mm-hmm. a really important side of it. But also that school is still important, or the subjects are still important, because you can't code a computer game without being good at maths or good at English or good at art to design like the scenery. So other things, like, I think if you're going to take English and then be an English teacher, fine, that's a very clear path. But so many jobs involve writing. And so many like businesses involve writing that actually English is kind of important on that level. So I think seeing education as a path to somewhere else probably does have benefits, but it still involves that constant like questioning throughout the whole journey.
Yes. And in your TED Talk, you bring this up, like why it's important to be innovative, to be creative, to be solution oriented, is because we don't know the direction that our careers are going to be going.
Yeah.
The careers that our kids are going to have probably don't exist right now. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we do have to be creative and innovative. And I like exactly what you're saying, that we do need education, but it's something, but we don't want to go through with it just to check off a box or to go through it just because that's what everybody's doing. We should go through it with that purpose, that it's a means to an end, not mm-hmm. just an end. You know, I think a lot of times you go through education because that's what we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Without really a vision of where it's taking us.
Yeah.
And that's something that, you know, we get caught in this trap of, then we don't know where it's going. Well, I'm supposed to just get a job, right? But then what if the jobs aren't there? And, you know, and so it's important, like you were saying, that we need to be innovative. We need to be creative. We need to be looking at our education from the perspective of, you know, how can I apply this to what I want to do, rather than just going through the motions of getting an education.
There's a really nice TED Talk by Sir Ken Robinson, and it's called Why Schools Kill Creativity. Have you seen it?
It's brilliant. I think I have, yeah.
And so he says, I think it's quite at the start of the talk, he says, if an alien came down from outer space and he looked at the whole education system and where it is now, this alien would assume that the purpose of education was to teach people how to become university professors.
Nice.
And it kind of makes sense if you think, because it would be actually very easy to go through the whole education conveyor belt, then go back into teaching straight away and just work your way up the teaching chain until you're a university professor. And that's almost like you've completed it, like it's a video game.
Yeah.
And so at some point there just has to be the thinking to break that cycle. But I think if someone's grown up always analyzing stuff, then they're probably better equipped in order to do that.
Mm-hmm. I think too, that analyzing and also getting experience. Yeah. Like I think that the trouble with the conveyor belt type of education is that it's so academic. It's so just out of a book. And you know, the like definition of academic is not practical.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And so it's not something you're actually getting like hands-on experience. Academic is actually just cold, hard facts.
Yeah.
But you can't really apply that until you get out and you get real experience.
We recently put out a like a journal request through Clever Tykes, asking parents how they were raised to be entrepreneurial, or how they were raising entrepreneurial kids. And we got about 400 responses, which I'm kind of working my way through to put into kind of a download or something. But I was fascinated with how many of the responses were that parents teach their kids how to be entrepreneurial by bringing them to work Mm-hmm. And it was almost like a take your kids to the office day or take your kids to work. Like it was amazing. And I can imagine they must get so much out of that just from mm-hmm. seeing mom or dad just doing what they do and then start to understand why. And there were some mums and dads who'd responded who actually gave their son or daughter like little tasks to do so that they could feel like they were actually part of it. Yeah. And then that led to different conversations about, well, what are you doing now? And, you know, how are you going to respond to that email even? And starting to have to kind of see how that worked as well. So I can definitely see that being of benefit, just an introduction to the world of work from an early age.
Yeah. And it even goes back to that question, what are you going to do? What do you think you should do? And if they have that experience to draw from, then they can start to go, oh, I think, and then it leads them down a path to more experience and getting more understanding of the world and their place in it. You know, I referred you to Oliver DeMille and what he talks about is that in order to get an innovative education, it involves internships is what he calls it. Mm-hmm. It's basically experience, you know, it could be apprenticeships or courses, you know, whatever it is that actually gets you in, you know, having a mentor or advisor or a coach or something where you're getting actual hands-on experience and then studying and then he says that the second element is studying classics or getting basically that basic education where you're able to take your language arts experience, your math experience, and then apply them towards that experience. And then those are both leading you towards your mission in life.
Yeah.
So, you know, because I think a lot of times when we don't have that, we're not solution oriented, we're not thinking about, you know, what is my place in this world? What do I bring to the table? What do I have to contribute? Then we're not driven by some kind of a purpose or a mission that we have to fulfill. Mm-hmm. But the education, when you do have that mission, then you see a purpose to the education and you see a purpose to the experience. And mm-hmm. so it all feeds into that and you start, and that creates that innovativeness because you start to think, how is this going to contribute to my mission and what I have to contribute to the world or what I can do to create solutions. So I think that's super, super, super important to have that solution oriented perspective. To have how, you know, that I think is how you create that resourcefulness. And so, I mean, would you agree? And then we can talk about how to create more independence.
Yeah. I think that having it's like what you were saying earlier about reading Simon Sinek and the Start With Why mm-hmm. books and about having the purpose that everything else comes from. But I think also it's about, I feel like when I'm kind of winning at life, when I feel like I'm winning at life is when I am doing work that doesn't feel like work.
Mm-hmm.
And because you could be writing something for hours and then you look back at it and you're like, oh my God, that was work. And then, and it doesn't, it's amazing because you're like, wow, this is a hobby and it's fun. And I'd be doing this if I wasn't getting paid for it.
Right.
And so it's like, how can we find that in kids? Because there will be so many things that they just love doing and they could spend hours and hours doing. And the key is like working out, well, how could you do this all the time? Like, imagine if you could do it all the time, what would you have to get good at first? And then, well, it's in the Code at Cody book, it is, he wants to design computer games and then mm-hmm. he works out how he can do it. And then he has like a new invigorated passion for everything else because he knows that it's leading to the bigger goal of what he really wants to do. I think the hard thing with that is that you almost don't want there to be like pressure on someone to work out what they want to do and feel like they have to have an answer, but the answer might just be there because everyone's got something that they really love doing.
So how do you to like answer for parents who are going, but my kids do have a checklist of things that they have to do.
Mm-hmm.
How do I infuse that with a purpose and passion?
Someone that I interviewed for a podcast was an amazing lady called Una Collins, who is now a business coach for lots of different kind of executives and senior team members. And she was talking about her mom raised her to be very enterprising and resourceful. And one of the things that her mom taught her was that in everything you do, have a sense of purpose. And so she called it SOP for sure. And so in everything that they were doing, even if it was like, cleaning, I don't know, cleaning their bedrooms or something, she'd always bring it back to sense of purpose here. And again, the why. So it's mm-hmm. not just I'm cleaning my bedroom because I have to tick it off the chores list. It's I'm cleaning my bedroom because I want to sleep in a nice place, because I want to feel fresh, and I want to have a clear mind. And it's always going back to the why, because I'd probably bet that everything on a list has a why behind it.
Yeah.
Otherwise it wouldn't be on it. So finding that why, it's like, you know, Mary Poppins, it's just popped into my head. You know, Mary Poppins, when they're like, how do you find the fun in everything? And if you find mm-hmm. the fun, the job's a game. And even if the purpose of something is just because it's fun and because it's a game and because we can learn how to do something, then maybe that's enough.
I think that's a really good point, because if you do start with your why, if you get clear on your vision, then everything has that purpose. It has that clear reason behind it. And so my purpose with Family Culture and my podcast is to go to try and teach people that families need to sit down and get clear on their vision, get clear on their purpose for why they're doing this stuff, and enroll their children in that vision, in that purpose. You know, we're not just doing this to force you to go to school because you hate it. We know you hate it, but or something. We're not trying to just make your life miserable, mm-hmm. but that there is a purpose and a vision behind all of that. But I think sometimes we get caught up in the day to day that mm-hmm. we forget to pause and reinforce that vision. Mm. And in the book, The 12-Week Year, he talks about if you have a crisis of passion, then it's actually a crisis of vision. And that once you have your vision, the passion follows. And then Simon Sinek in the Start With Why book, he talks about how all of the way to accomplish your vision, like, springs out of the vision and having that formed in as clearly as you can from the start. And then, you know, as along the way, it makes it easier to answer the question, how, or is, you know, does X, Y, and Z honor our values? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I really love that perspective, that if you have that, even the worst tasks can be infused with that vision if you have it clear. And you can go, you know what, it's okay. I'm going to go and wash those dishes because I know. Yeah. Or I'm going to go, you know, we're going to sit down and work through this homework because there is purpose. There's a bigger vision to what we're doing here.
I wonder if it's really easy to see people who are operating at the top of their game in whatever field they're in. So maybe business people, maybe sports people who are absolutely doing exactly what they want to and are achieving things. I wonder if it's really easy to miss out the hard work side of it and to almost like not see the journey and almost think that people were overnight successes when actually that doesn't happen. And because that's part of the magic, isn't it? The people who are there, part of their magic is that they make it look so easy.
Yeah.
But actually, if you break it down, if you look into what a world champion boxer does, they probably don't want to get up at 4 a.m. and do their training. They probably don't want to, you know, be staying in when their friends are out and doing all the stuff. But because they want to be a world champion boxer, they're prepared to do all the little hard things because they know it will add up to that.
Yeah.
And so having a purpose and knowing where you want to be can help you stick to it with the smaller things. Which feels like something that probably isn't taught that much, like the actual struggle and being able to go through things, because it's so common to just want things to all be easy. But I think one thing I've definitely learned is that success is just never an accident. It's always on purpose. And you kind of don't need it to be easy. You just need it to be possible. You just need whatever you're doing to be possible so that you can progress through it, learn from it, get over it, and then move on to the next thing. And then that leads you to where you want to be. But then maybe there's too much. Maybe it's just too easy to say, oh, well, that's difficult. So, okay, you can stop without saying, okay, move past this soon. It'll feel really easy.
That's definitely something that I've learned through starting my podcast and trying to start a business, is that it's not easy. There's always... there's always some kind of obstacle or something to learn. Like you talked about when you started writing these books, it opened up a well of craziness and difficulty and challenge, but that's part of the process. I think it's so natural for us to want to have a fixed mindset about our progression that, you know, if it's difficult, then we just aren't capable of rising to that challenge.
Yeah.
Because our intelligence is fixed. And so when things are difficult, then we just give up. So how would you talk me through what it means to have a growth mindset?
Yeah.
And how to encourage that?
Okay. There are two kind of books that spring to mind that I've read recently. One of them is called Perennial Seller by Ryan Holiday, and it's about creating work that stands the test of time. And there's a section in it where he talks about it being really easy to want to be the noun without doing the verb. So wanting to be a writer without doing the writing, and wanting to be a singer without just singing all the time, and wanting to be a success without putting in the successful actions that will happen. Mm-hmm. And then also there's a book called The Hard Thing About Hard Things, which I love. It's the easy thing is to set the big goal. The hard thing is to have to lay people off when you don't reach the goal. The easy thing is to like hire really amazing people. The hard thing is to know what to do when they're not how you thought they would be. And mm-hmm. just comparing lots of things where this is the easy part. Don't kind of give yourself too much of a pat on the back for getting the easy part right. Go and work on getting the hard thing right. And that can probably be related to a lot of different things that kids will just go through mm-hmm. in their day to day. Because if there's a choice between two things that they want to do next, like, of course it's easier to sit there and play on the Xbox or something instead of tackling that thing that you know has been playing on your mind. But it's like kind of talking through it and trying to get them to almost like want the hard thing, to want to go for the thing that's going to be difficult because of the rewards it will bring.
Mm-hmm.
I used to at university, I used to be on the cross country team, and one of the things that we used to do is when we were training, I went to uni in Sheffield in England, which is really hilly. So like it's got some mm-hmm. of the highest hills just around the normal streets. I think of anywhere in England. And so when we went training, we would just inevitably have loads of hills to climb. And whenever we went up one, the whole running team would be chanting, "We love the hills, we love the hills." And we just had to, we like ingrained it into our mindset so that whenever we were faced with a hill, we weren't thinking, "Oh, that's going to be really hard to get to the top." It was like we had this thing. And like if I go running now, I still think of it in my head at the start of a hill. I'm like, "We love this, we love this." And it's so powerful. And I'm sure it can be applied to lots of different things, like teaching people to love even in the hard things.
Mm-hmm.
So I found this really interesting. It was a parent, a dad, who was making sure that his son wasn't affected by the weather in a negative way.
Mm-hmm.
Because he thought, you can't control what the weather's doing. And he said, I've seen other parents who, you know, when it's raining, they'll just stay inside. They won't do anything. Whereas what he's teaching his son to do is go, "Wow, it's raining, puddles, yes." And like they'd put on wellies and they'd go like splashing through the puddles and they'd look at, like they collect leaves and just silly things like that. But it's like, you can't control the weather. So you might as well see the good in it all the time and try and not kind of condition your happiness or your success to things that you just can't control.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it feels like that kind of goes towards the growth mindset thing, because you're only focusing on what you can control and what you can build through rather than just what's going on around you.
Yeah. I think what I really got out of what you just said was how when you cannot avoid trials and hardships. Mm-hmm. And that a lot of times I think that, you know, by saying, "Oh no, it's raining or it's too cold, we're going to stay inside," there's a lot that kids are not developing by getting out there and experiencing things firsthand. Like kids are playing outside less, or getting a lot of less physical activity. Mm-hmm. And they're finding that these kids are developing less in all areas of their development. Mm-hmm. And it's because they're not getting that experience. They're not becoming more resilient to all those different experiences. And so it doesn't translate over to everything else. It does translate, like the lack of resilience translates into everything else.
Yeah.
And their development, that even their brains aren't even developing proper, like, learning capacities or social skills and things like that. When we try to avoid the risk or to avoid the trauma of doing something hard or challenging, then we're missing out on the opportunity to grow and to become more resilient. And so that's something that I've been thinking a lot about lately, because I just think that's something that we do inadvertently, you know, like when we do swoop in and we say, stop doing this thing, you're going to get hurt, or you're going to do something embarrassing, or mm-hmm. go, or, you know, trying to control their path. Yeah. You know, going back to, you know, your mom telling you to pack your own suitcase. It's like, we do that inadvertently, where we say, stop doing X, Y, and Z. I don't want you to get hurt. Or stay in from the rain. I don't want you to get wet.
Yeah.
But then we're depriving our kids of that experience and the opportunity to try something and see what happens and to develop the capacity to problem solve.
Something that I think has helped me, especially kind of growing up, I probably didn't realize that it was happening at the time, was I've definitely always been around like family members who've just avoided labeling things.
Mm.
And so if it's raining outside, all I know for sure is it's raining outside. It doesn't mean it's a good thing. It doesn't mean it's a bad thing. It doesn't mean it's anything. It just means it's raining. And then you can decide what to do with it only on the facts. And I think growing up as well, I again, didn't realize it at the time, but I don't remember my parents ever having negative opinions of other people.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't remember them ever saying, oh, he was annoying, or she was rude, or anything like that. It just never occurred to me to just kind of judge someone. And I think that just feels like it's...
You're a rare person, rare gem, Jodi.
but taking that... Because if you take away judgments, then you've just got so much more freedom to just make decisions based on what you know for sure, rather than what someone's interpretation might be. Because how many people haven't fulfilled their potential because they're worried about what someone else thinks? And that makes me really sad. And it's like, why does it matter? Who is it? Who even is that other person?
Uh-huh.
Who are they to stop you doing what you want to do? And therefore, why does it even matter? And I think kids especially, like, you might be, I don't know, the class bully or someone that's not very nice to them or something. It's, how do you make them see that it's a reflection on that person and not on you? And it's almost like, don't do anything differently. Don't change how you're acting because you're worried about what someone else might think. Because who cares? Like, let them think that. It doesn't matter. Mm. So avoiding labels, avoiding opinions.
I love that so much.
Yeah.
That's something that has also really been hitting me really hard lately, because when we raise our kids, we want to pigeonhole them into labels, because mm-hmm. then it gives us validation as parents, going, my kid is successful. My kid is righteous. My kid is doing the right things, X, Y, and Z, whatever it may be. But then we're setting them up and ourselves up for disappointment in a lot of ways, because when we start labeling or setting expectations for what we expect the outcome that our parenting will be, then we're setting conditions on our love for our kids. And that's, to me, that's our job, is to love our kids, you know? And I mean, because somebody said this lately, like, our job as parents is to make sure that they grow up faithful to our religion, you know? Like, if they struggle financially or in relationships, at least if they have their faith, then we know we did our job, you know? But it's like, a lot of kids don't always grow up adhering to their parents' faith.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just told them that you're not going to love them anymore if they leave the church or if they leave your faith. Mm-hmm. And the same thing goes, if your kid grows up and you go, I expect them to be a lawyer, I expect them to be a doctor, I expect them to be X, Y, and Z, then you're essentially telling them that if they don't do those things, then there are conditions on your love as a parent. There should not be conditions on, when we start labeling our kids, and there it becomes conditions for how we define success. Mm-hmm. And I think that when we, or how we define if they deserve our love as parents. But once we take away those labels, once we take away that judgment and we say, I support you in whatever journey you're on to try and figure out who you are, what you're supposed to be doing, what your mission and purpose is in this world, I support you, then kids are going to be more passionate, more desire, you know, desire for whatever it is that they're supposed to be doing. And they will actually become more trusting. You become more trusting of each other. Mm-hmm. If you take away those labels, because then you know that no matter what happens, you love and support each other. And to me, that is a huge, I just had a conversation with my sister about this, because she struggled with her oldest daughter, like her whole childhood. And she figured out that it was because she expected her daughter to fit into an image that she had in her mind of what her daughter should be. And so then her daughter didn't feel like she was loved. Mm-hmm. And so now she's going back over that, and she's trying to heal from that and reestablish a relationship with her daughter based on that unlove, because they didn't have that growing up. And so that to me is the biggest foundation, that if your kids feel loved and supported and not judged, then they have freedom to be independent and to be resourceful and to take risks.
Because on that as well, have you ever noticed if someone just kind of, I don't know, tripped over, like a child, and then you said, oh, you're clumsy, they'd almost become clumsy because you told them that that's what they were. Yeah. They would almost become the labels that you gave them. And really, if you just look at the actual facts, someone tripping over does not mean that they are defined as a clumsy person. It means they tripped over. Like, everyone does it. So what? Big deal. But
yeah,
it is. Like, I get it with me and my little sister. It's like you. Someone always wants to define you and say, oh, they're the academic one, they're the creative one, they're the funny one, they're the whatever it is. And really, you can just be different mixes of all the different things that you don't need to be in a box. I think there's quite a lot of like danger in putting people in boxes too much, because then they start to feel like, well, they either feel like that's me, that's how I'm defined, or they start to think no one gets me, and then feel like that's breaking down the relationships that they've got.
Yeah. And I think that people either feel like they have to fit into that box, or they want to do everything to not fit into that box. And neither is really healthy or productive, right?
Right. It's just energy based on, it's just energy used in a kind of pointless direction, because it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't. Because either way, the voice in your head is not yours. It's that person defining you based on what you should be or what you don't want to be. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think that if you just let go of the judgment, don't assign that to your children, and then that allows them the freedom to discover themselves and to cultivate their own voice. Mm. Thank you so much, Jodi.
Thanks for having me. We got super deep. What's up? It's really interesting. I could talk about this for hours and hours and hours.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, you've written all these books about how to help kids develop these skills and these traits. And I think that ultimately, I think your message is really important about creating resourcefulness, creating independence, because someday our kids are going to grow up.
Yep. And they're going to be the people making all the decisions, hiring, firing the robots, programming the robots, everything. So, yeah.
And we don't know what their job, you know, what they're going to be doing. Because like we said, it could be anything that doesn't even exist now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can't wait till I'm like, I don't know, an old grandma, and I speak to my grandkids and they're like, and I'm like, oh, what do you do? What do you do for a job now? And they tell me something and I'm like, what does that even mean?
Yeah,
like, right? It's incredible that the world's going to even change that much in the next like 10, 20, 30 years.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jodi. I really love talking with you about these things. I think that's super important. And I'm really excited about your books. I'm going to take these downstairs right now and read them with my kids because I'm so excited. So I got Code It Cody and I got Change It Cho.
Mm-hmm. There's also Walk It Willow and Write It Ryan.
Awesome. So where can we find these books? We mentioned they're on Amazon.
So the US, for people in the USA, they are on Amazon. And if you just type in Clever Tykes, then you'll find them all. And then we've got clevertykes.com. And then me personally is jodicook.com. And that's all kind of writing and enterprise education and all this stuff on the same theme, really.
That's Jodi with an IE, right?
It is, yes. JODIE, yep.
Awesome.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure, and definitely keep in touch.
Thank you so much, Jodi. Thank you for listening. I love getting your feedback. You can like, rate, and share on your favorite broadcasting medium or social media platform. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest at Family Culture Podcast and on Twitter at _FamilyCulture. Come check out my show notes and resources at homeandfamilyculture.com. Thanks again for listening. Mother Teresa once said, "If you want to change the world, go home and love your family."